The PGA Tour presents the fusion of golf, music, sports, and entertainment. Golf Talk America, streaming live on PGATour.com. Follow us today and every day on Twitter at Golf Talk America. Now, the Golf Talk America crew.
And hello again, everybody. Welcome to Golf Talk America. Tim Matthews with you this morning, and it is the 18th of November. It's Friday, and that means, well, at least for the people who are playing on the PGA Tour in this country, it's starting time or thereabouts for the second round of the tournament that they're playing at Sea Island, Georgia, one of the prettiest places that they play all year long. This, of course, is the RSM Classic that they're playing. We'll give you the leaderboard on that. But there are also golf tournaments all over the world, and some have already completed their second round as we speak to now. And some of the top golfers are choosing to play around the world and not playing necessarily at the RSM. So we'll give you a look at what's going on around the world, too. We'll also be joined a little bit later on with someone with the ladies tour, at least the writer, and that's our good friend Steve Eubanks with Global Golf Post. He is covering the CME Group Tour Championship at Tiburon Golf Club in Naples, Florida. So Steve will give us an update on what's going on the ladies tour and down there in beautiful Naples, Florida. And of course, this being Friday, we'll be joined by our good friend Dickie Pride, PGA Tour veteran, who will talk to us and share his wisdom on pretty much everything that we choose to talk about. But that'll include, this being Friday and college football season, a couple of picks that Dickie likes to keep his eye on for some college football games coming up as his Alabama Crimson Tide continues to roll, no pun intended, to try to win another national championship. We'll see if that happens. Big upset last night as Louisville was beaten by Houston. So Louisville looks like they're out of the picture for a national championship, but who's going to win it this year? It's there's several teams still in the running, and we'll talk to Dickie about that coming up in just a little bit. As I said, I'm in the Dallas studios. Frank Bassett joins us, as always, from the Nashville studios. How's everything going, Frank? Have you still got your gas mask, your fog mask on there for the smoke that you've been getting there in the southeast with all those forest fires?
Yeah. I mean, wow, we're getting a lot. It's froggy or smoky out there.
Yeah,
it's pretty bad, and it's they're talking arson. And why would somebody do that? Why would people do that purposely?
I don't get it.
Ridiculous. But you know what's happening here in
Nashville?
It's pretty
forestry, too.
It's beautiful. Oh, Tennessee's a gorgeous state. When you get into Middle and East Tennessee, now West Tennessee is flat. Memphis is Mississippi River bottom. So, and Rick Dees, the famous DJ from Memphis that moved to L.A. and recorded Disco Duck, when he was living in Memphis working for WHBQ television and radio, once said, "Memphis is the only city built on a bluff and run the same way." And he left town. That was his parting shot at Memphis, Tennessee. You know, Tennessee's kind of like California. Northern California is nothing like Southern California. And Tennessee is the same way. Middle Tennessee is, of course, the hotbed, Nashville. It's Nash, Vegas, L.A., New York combined. East Tennessee is gorgeous. The mountains, the Smoky Mountains, Knoxville, which I'm not a big UT fan, but and then we just leave West Tennessee. They need to be annexed by Arkansas or Mississippi or something. You know, they can go
Ooh,
away.
Harsh.
But Poncho's cheese dip is the best cheese dip in the world. I got to tell you, and it's only in Memphis, Tennessee. So there, they don't pay us. They just they don't do anything for us. I grew up on Poncho's cheese dip. I love it. But hey, got to tell you that in Nashville, the Uncivil War occurs tomorrow night at 6:30 p.m. Central Time.
And what would that be?
In Vanderbilt Stadium. And we'll talk more about that with Dickie. But Ned Michaels, who used to be one of our co-hosts on Golf Talk America, good friend, played on the Vanderbilt golf team, won the Mason Rudolph Cup, played with Snedeker on that Vanderbilt golf team, challenged me yesterday. We're going to tailgate and go to the game. And so I'll have to do something. He'll have to come on the air with us if they win, and if we win, I go on his local radio show next Wednesday night here and get to harass him. That's our annual bet.
Nice.
So, but Ned's a heck of a player, buddy. I'll tell you, he's great.
So golfer. tell those of us that aren't living in Nashville, who Vanderbilt is playing? You just said Vanderbilt.
Oh, I did. I didn't say. I would think everybody would know. It's the Ole Miss Rebels. Ole Miss Rebels are playing Vanderbilt. Here.
I gotcha.
And it's 80 degrees here today, Tim. 80 degrees in Nashville. Beautiful, sunny. Tonight, 9:30, thunderstorms roll through. I think they're coming through your area now.
Cold front.
Game time temperature in the low 40s. So there you go.
It's beautiful, isn't it?
Yahoo.
I was talking to my daughter yesterday, and last night she's in Chicago. She just finished working out, and she said, "Dad, it's like 70 degrees. It's 8 o'clock at night," and she had a tank top on, walking in the streets. We were FaceTiming, and she said, "By Saturday, this was Thursday night." She said, "By Saturday, they're saying it could be snowing." So
where is she?
I don't know if it's global warming. I don't know what's going on, but it's some weird weather, isn't it? I mean, from one day to the next, almost, it goes from short sleeves and 70 degrees plus to put on your parka.
Well, it's, Tim, I've seen pictures of your daughter and her friends, and you need to get weaponry and surround them when they're out walking around, because they're beautiful young ladies. And where is she now? Where's your daughter?
She's in Chicago.
Chicago. Yeah. Okay. Oh, gosh.
She lives in Chicago.
She needs to get out of there. Whew. Get back to the South where she belongs.
Get back to the warm weather.
That's right.
Hey,
absolutely.
By the way, before we get to Steve Eubanks here, I'll give you a little look at what's going on around the rest of the world. As we said, the RSM Classic is taking place at Sea Island, Georgia, and they're going to be getting ready to tee up here in a little bit for the second round. Mackenzie Hughes has the first round lead. Phew. He shoots an opening round 61.
Wow.
Every tournament seems to start with a 60, 61, 62 these days. So he gets a 61. He's at 9 under. Jonathan Bird is one shot back, along with Blaine Barber and Stuart Sink, also had a very nice 62. And on and on. There's a number of other guys that are playing in this, but not necessarily the top guys in the field or in the world of rankings. Jim Furyk got off to a 64, so he's at 6 under. So some pretty good golfers there, but some of the bigger name golfers are playing around the world. Australian Open is where you find Jordan Spieth. He is now through two rounds because they're way ahead of us. It's like Mars time in Australia, and through two rounds, he's tied for fifth, and so he's looking pretty good. James Nitties has a lead. He's at 9 under par, so Jordan Spieth is four shots back. That's, remember, where he started after his rookie year, Frank. Remember when he kind of caught everybody's attention and played so well in an abbreviated rookie year? He won the Australian Open when everybody was saying, oh, you know, what's he going to do for the next year? And that led up to his 2015 spectacular year when he won two majors and was in the hunt for four majors. It started at the Australian Open. So Jordan goes back there, shows his loyalty, and obviously loves playing in Sydney. So he's playing well again at 5 under par. I'm sorry, at tied for fifth place there at 6 under par. And meanwhile, the DP World Tour Championship in Dubai for the European guys. Sergio Garcia has the lead. He's at 9 under. Henrik Stenson at 3 under. And Rory McIlroy is playing in that tournament as well. And he is 1 under par, tied for 29th place right now. So both Spieth and Rory getting ready for their return to the PGA Tour on a regular basis, still playing internationally. And if you remember, we talked about this last year, Frank, during a lot of the 2016 season, that Jordan might not have had as good a year as he had the previous year, in part because of fatigue, because these guys travel the world, right? They're all over the place. And a lot of people said, well, Jordan went from Dubai to Australia to the Bahamas for Tiger's tournament, and he was jet setting. And it sounds really kind of cool and neat, you know, in a global sense. But it can wear on you a little bit. And the time zones change, and it did, and it might have taken an effect. So Jordan says, after he plays in Australia, he's going to kind of cool it and concentrate more on the U.S. portion of the PGA Tour. I think that's smart on his case.
I do too. I think it's very smart. You know, he said that to both of us when we were at his Family Foundation event in Dallas last month. He said he walked off the 16th green at the Ryder Cup when he lost his match, and he had not touched a club until that day that he was playing in his own Family Foundation event. He said, "I'm just worn out, tired."
And that was about 6 weeks later.
Yeah.
Yeah, he still hadn't touched a club.
Yeah.
So,
that's the same spot where Zach Johnson looked at us and said, I'm probably going to go to a different PXG head because I need a little more forgiveness.
Yeah.
For what? He missed one.
You and I need forgiveness. I don't know what he needs. Yeah, but I don't know what he needs. It's not forgiveness.
You need confession.
I do. I need to go see a priest real soon.
Really? Yeah.
So I think all the top golfers have so many tournaments where, and you get, you know, let's be honest, a lot of these tournaments overseas pay money to have you show up, and it's happened with Tiger and Phil and all the top golfers that they'll get appearance money. It's hard to turn it down, and a lot of times it's seven figures. And so, really, just to show up, I can get that. It's hard to say no, especially when you're young and, you know, trying to build your war chest into $100 million. You need all the money you can get. But they realize that it does sometimes take its toll when they come back here and play five or six straight tournaments in a row, and they're like, man, I don't have enough gas in the tank.
They pay us to not come. They pay Golf Talk America to not show up. Please, we'll give you money. Stay away.
So we'll see. We'll see how those – we'll keep you updated when we talk to you next week. We'll give you the updates on how Jordan played in Sydney and how Rory and Sergio and the boys played in Dubai. So that's a little look at the world of golf as we see it today. We're going to take a quick time out here. When we come back, senior writer for Global Golf Post, Steve Eubanks, will join us, and he is coming to us from the CME Group Tour Championship in Tiburon, golf course in Naples, the site of the LPGA event this week. So we'll talk with Steve when we come back. You're listening to Golf Talk America here on PGA Tour Radio. Stay with us. And welcome back to Golf Talk America. Tim Matthews with you this morning. Again, it's the 18th of November. It's a Friday, and the PGA Tour is getting ready for its second round. The LPGA Tour also getting ready for its second round as the women are down in beautiful Naples, Florida for the CME Group Tour Championship in Naples at Tiburon Golf Club. And a beautiful golf course it is, a beautiful place to be, and we're all envious of our guests right now. Steve Eubanks, senior writer for Global Golf Post, is there on the site. Steve, how are you doing this morning, and how is Naples? Is Steve there?
What? Yeah. Can you guys hear me now? I lost you for a second. No, yeah. Everything down here is beautiful. You're right. It's been a great week in Florida.
Yeah, it's it seems like the teams, I mean, the golfers that are playing are really taking advantage of the perfect weather as well. We'll look at the leaderboard. You have Shancheng Fang is at 6 under par. Charlie Hull, one shot behind, along with, and I'm going to butcher the names, I'm sure, but So-Yun Ru at 5 under. Mo Martin in the United States is at 4 under par. So obviously a very international field, as almost every LPGA event is. And Steve, I'm curious, when you go from, and you cover all the different golf events from the Champions Tour to the PGA Tour, LPGA Tour, but when you go from the PGA to the LPGA, certainly the power is different. The precision might be different as well from the women's standpoint. From you covering it, do you favor one over the other, or do you just love golf so much it doesn't matter who's playing as long as you're at a tournament?
It's like a breath of fresh air when I come back to the LPGA. And I wish everybody that's listening would go to an LPGA event and see it in person. Because once you see one in person, you're hooked, and you're hooked for life. And the reason is, I mean, not only is the talent level really exceptional, and you're right. I mean, look, nobody bombs at 380 out here, but the precision and the speed and the pound for pound distances that some of these gals hit it is extraordinary. But beyond that, the entire experience out here, engagement with the players, you know, them getting it, you know, their fan interaction. It's nothing like the PGA Tour. Well, I say that. It's like the PGA Tour was in the 70s and 80s when you know, these guys still were a little bit hungry and still understood the value of the fan base and the, you know, the marketing dollar. But I got to tell you, it is a tremendous experience out here. And you mentioned So-Yun Ru, who I'm so happy is a shot out of the lead right now, because, quite frankly, she's the nicest person in golf. Not the nicest person in ladies
really?
Golf. She's the nicest person in golf. And I wish more people would get to know her and others like her so that they could get that full experience.
So we're talking with Steve Eubanks, senior writer for Global Golf Post. So, Steve, if I'm reading you accurately, if you're replacing Tim Fincham as a tour commissioner, and I mean this in all seriousness, would you talk to the players and send out a memo, do something, and try to adjust the attitude, if you will, or however nicely you want to put that, to make them, the PGA Tour players, more accessible, more fan-friendly, if you will, like the LPGA Tour is?
Well, the first thing I would do if I was Tim Fincham is I'd come spend a week out here and see exactly what it is that makes this tour so popular and makes this experience so much different. It is things like, you know, when the girls are walking off the driving range on their way to the first tee, you know, that nobody's got their heads down, nobody's got an entourage surrounding them. Yeah, they're going to work, but they're still engaging with the fans that have come out to see them because they know where the bread's buttered. I mean, they understand that without that fan base, you know, there is no television. Without the television, there is no sponsor. Without the sponsor, there is no tour.
Hey, Steve.
So, I mean, everybody out here understands that. They get it, and they work diligently to engage at every level.
Hey, Steve, two words. Michael Wan. He's done an incredible job with the LPGA, and now the PGA Tour and the LPGA have signed a joint marketing agreement. So I think the spillover will occur. I really do. And the LPGA, And Michael Wan, under his leadership, has come a long, long way. What's your thought on that?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, no, no, no. There's no doubt about it. I mean, look, all corporate culture stems from the top. And Wan has really set a vibrant but also a marketing-driven corporate culture here. Everybody here understands it. Everybody here really, you know, they want the media to be here. They want the fans to be here. There is no adversarial relationships out here. You know, this is the one sporting event, not just golf event, sporting event, where when I show up, the entire staff of the organization is genuinely happy to see me here and go out of their way to make sure I have everything I need, you know, is there anything I can help you with, things that you just don't get, in sports media anymore.
Well, I think what we'll do, Tim and Steve, is this next season, let's make it a point to do two or three live broadcasts from some LPGA tournaments. I think that
sure.
we should
love it.
Because I like the LPGA legends. You know, I work with them a lot, but we've done nothing with the LPGA, and I think it's time. They have a podcast on their page, lpga.com, but we're talking with them right now about maybe doing some of that for them instead of them trying to do it catch as catch can and being, you know, week in and week out supporting it as we do the PGA Tour. So, and I know I didn't mean to take over the whole interview here, Tim, but I know Steve pretty well. He helped me out at East Lake and co-hosted and interviewed on the show. Your daughter also plays golf, does she not, Steve?
She does, yeah. I've got a 15-year-old daughter who's a good player, and she's actually on her way down here. She's in school right now, but is going to take a flight out this afternoon and come down and spend the weekend with me here in Naples. So, and again, I mean, the LPGA couldn't be more accommodating for her. You know, they can't wait to have her down here. So, yeah, that's the kind of operation that they have here, kind of organization you're dealing with. It's a joy to cover. It really makes it fun to go to work.
Well, you have some of the top lady golfers in the world there. Lydia Ko is also playing in Naples. She's open with the 2-under, 70. You also have Paula Kramer, Lexi Thompson, both are 1-under par. So you have the best players in the world that are playing there. So when you watch, Steve, and you're checking out the swings and the putting and the short game and everything else, other than the power, what differences do you see? So if somebody goes to an LPGA event, as you said, some people maybe have never gone to one. They watch it on TV maybe once in a while. But when you go there, what differences do you notice other than, I mean, the women's game, I remember an instructor one time, a well-known instructor, telling me that they don't have the short game that the men have. So in addition to the power that is obvious, they also lack sometimes a short game of getting up and down out of bunkers and the things that the men could do. Do you see a difference there, or do you think the women and the men, when it comes to the short game and it's not about the muscle mass, that they're very comparable?
Well, I would say that it's not as big a gap as it used to be. And whoever told you that, well, it would have been right 10 years ago, that it was, you know, that you could see a marked difference around the greens between men and women. The only thing right now that I see is the ability to recover, hit recovery shots out of thick rough and that sort of thing. And again, that's a function of strength. You know, it's how big are your forearms and how much can you muscle a shot out of ankle deep rough? Other than that, I mean, this is the kind of game the average golfer needs to be watching.
Sure, yeah,
because
that's what they play.
It's closer to the game you're going to play.
Right. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right in that. And in addition to that, they're all mostly so charming and nice and friendly. It's hard to say anything bad about the LPGA. So I agree with you 100%. People, if you're anywhere around an LPGA event, you're really going to enjoy it. You'll have a great time, and you will maybe for the first time get really to see up close and personal some professional golfers that you don't necessarily always see on the PGA Tour. Hey, Steve, let me change the subject here a little bit for you and bring up Tiger Woods. Getting back to playing, we all expect, or we're being told, that he'll be playing in a couple of weeks at his Hero World Challenge. What are you expecting from a professional golf writer who watches golf for a living and has done it for years and years and week in and week out? What are you expecting from Tiger after basically an 18-month time off period?
I think that opening tee shot is going to be perfect. He's going to stripe it. It's going to go right down the middle. He's going to give us that patented steely-eyed scowl, and he's probably going to twirl the club as he brings it back down. What I'm most interested in seeing is that first chip shot he has off of a tight lie. That's where I think it's going to be very telling, and that's where it's going to we're going to be able to decide fairly quickly whether or not this comeback has any legs or not. Because I don't think, I don't ever think he's going to be back in terms of hitting the types of shots that we saw at the prime of his career. His body simply won't let him do that. But I think that where we are going to see a difference is in the short game. And if he has the short game, great. If he doesn't, I think this could be a very short-lived return.
We're talking with Steve Eubanks, senior writer for Global Golf Post. And in saying that, Steve, let's say he does maybe not blow up, but he shoots, he's in the back of the pack. There's only 18 golfers, 20 golfers in this tournament. And let's say he's in the bottom five. Is that some kind of sign for him? Or is he going to say, well, I got to kind of play against an entire field. I've got to give myself some kind of, no matter where I finish, but let's say I am near the bottom, closer to the bottom than the top. How long do you think he goes into the season before he would say, boy, I don't know, I got to take some more time off or get ready? Would he have to go several tournaments of playing that way, or would he even let himself go that far?
I just can't get into his mind at this point, and I don't know what his motivations are at this point. That's the two things that worry me. Tiger never struck me as the kind of player who was just going to go out and mail it in because he loved being out there. He was not Arnold. I mean, look, if Arnold was out there shooting 80-80, he wasn't happy about it, but he was happy to be on the golf course. He might not have been happy with his performance, but you could tell he loved being out there. He loved the fans. He loved being on the golf course. He just loved hitting golf shots. So at some point in his career, again, he was never happy about the scores, but they kind of became irrelevant and secondary to the entire experience. Tiger is not that way. Tiger is a very reclusive kind of guy. He would much prefer to be off by himself unless he is able to compete at a level that he feels comfortable with. And if that doesn't happen quickly, I just don't know how long he stays out.
I'm curious also, Steve, about his mindset in the sense of you're talking about he's not physically able to do some of the things he did earlier in his career. Like every golfer, like every athlete, brings to mind here in Dallas the Tony Romo scenario of having to back off. A young guy's coming in and kind of taking his job. There are young golfers out there that play the power game a lot more than Tiger does. Does he have the ability to lay up on par fives like he never had to before, to do the things that all golfers have to do at some point when they get a little bit older? Will he be able to do those things mentally and not go for greens from 270 yards out with a 3-iron?
Oh, sure. Look, I've always thought he had the mental strength to do that sort of thing. I mean, I have seen him in situations where, he's in a drivable par four, but he hits 7-iron off the tee because that was the strategy he had coming into the week, and that's the strategy he stuck to. In terms of his mental strength and his discipline and his ability to remain within that game plan, that isn't a question. The question's execution. If he lays up on that par five to 80 yards, what's that 80-yard shot going to look like? That's the question. The question is if he can't rip that 3-iron onto the green and he rips that 3-iron into the bunker, what does the bunker play look like? What does that first six-footer look like? He won a number of golf tournaments not because he overpowered the place, but because he had the best short game in the world. That seemed to have abandoned him when he walked away. That's what I'm most interested in watching now.
Well, we'll see how it all plays out. Again, he's scheduled to play in the Hero World Challenge in the Bahamas first weekend of December with him and 18 of his best friends and a lot of money at stake. And World Golf Rankings, he is now, by the way, ranked over 800. I lost track of the last time. I think it's in the 840 range that he's ranked in the world. I believe Steve Eubanks is 853. So you're right behind him, Steve. You got to feel good about that.
as soon as he drops below me, I'm going to make sure I put it up on all social media platforms.
It's coming. It could be coming pretty soon, but we'll see what happens with him. Hey, Steve, thanks so much for your time. We do appreciate it, and continued success with Global Golf Post. Also, have a good time down there in Naples with the women at the CME Group Tour Championship down in Tiburon, Florida.
Thanks, guys. Enjoyed it.
Thanks, okay. Steve.
Steve Eubanks, good guy, and great insight, as always. And Frank, I have to agree with him. I've been to a number, yeah, at least a handful of LPGA events, and they are fun, and it's just more relaxed. I mean, you go to a PGA event, and I've said this to you before, I kind of hope at some point in my lifetime that they relax the attitude, because fans want to go there and enjoy themselves, and they want to make some noise and whatnot. Well, and, the whole restrictive part of going to a PGA Tour event and don't go here, don't do this, don't – at some point you get tired of being told don't do something when I'm paying money to walk in the gate.
Well,
and at the LPGA event, it's fun and people are relaxed and they have a good time.
I agree, but I have to in defense of the PGA Tour. You know, I've been, as you well know, this year at many events, and it's not quite that way. I mean, it's getting better. I have to defend them a little bit here, not because we're part of the PGA Tour as Golf Talk America, but because it really is. And on Pro-Am Day, it's just everybody's having fun and laughing and kidding. Now, when that tournament starts, I mean, you're playing for 1.5, 1.2, 1.8, whatever it may be. And that adds a little bit of pressure there. So, you know, when you're playing for that kind of money, I guess I just have to – I'd want to be a little more focused also if I had to make my yacht payment. So there.
Yeah, a lot of these guys do. That's for sure.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Dickie Pride will join us, PGA Tour veteran, and we'll be talking to Dickie about life on the PGA Tour, as well as get his thoughts about Tiger and find out what he's thinking about a little college football coming up this weekend as well. So Dickie Pride joins us when we come back. You're listening to Golf Talk America, and we'll be back right after this. Hey, welcome back, Golf Talk America. Tim Matthews in with you today, and we are talking just a shortly time ago. We talked with Steve Eubank, senior golf writer with Global Golf Post. He's at the CME Group Tour Championship in Naples, Florida, and gave us some great insight into some of the differences between the LPGA Tour and the PGA Tour, as well as getting into some Tiger Woods. And joining us now is our good friend Dickie Pride, who joins us every Friday here on Golf Talk America. Dickie Pride, PGA Tour veteran. How are you doing today, Dickie?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
Everything going all right?
Glad to hear it. I'm doing great, And we're going to talk some college football in just a second. But before we get to that and the annual, or not annual, the weekly picks with Dickie, I wanted to pick your brain a little bit about following up on what Steve just talked about. Steve, again, is at the LPGA event in Naples, Florida. Good place to be right about now. And he was making a contrast and saying, you know, it's fun and the women are accessible and it's kind of like what you hear a lot of times about the play on the PGA Tour champions, that they're accessible and it's fun and it's a little bit more laid back than the PGA Tour. I don't know if you've had much experience going to LPGA events or even champions events or whatnot, but do you notice a difference as well? And some of it is going to be, you know, it's just there's more at stake, I guess, on the PGA Tour in a lot of senses. And there's a lot more tension, and so it's a lot more tense in all aspects of it from the media and everything else. But have you been to LPGA events, and have you enjoyed it when you've gone?
Yes, I have. I have been to LPGA events and Champions Tour events, and it's definitely a different vibe. I mean, we just kind of relaxed. It's very similar to like the Web.com event tour because. Well, the Champions Tour is a little different beast because most of the people have had their careers. And as Steve Pate said when he went out there, I played his last tournament with him before he went to the Champions Tour. He said, I'm going out to play golf against the people I grew up with in carts with no cut. I cannot find a downside. And I think a lot of people really enjoy being able to. The guys, I mean, you got to remember, by the time you get a Champions Tour, you've probably known some of these guys 30 or 40 years. And sure. You get pretty close, so that's a great deal. With the LPGA and the web, especially the web, everyone's in the same boat. Everyone on the web.com is trying to get to the next level, and there's not a lot of money out there. So everyone, you kind of bond together. Some of the kids that I graduated with at web.com, you know, Kelly Kraft and the Michael Kims and a bunch of those kids, Trey Mullinax, Bobby Wyatt, that got their card last year that I played with on the web at, you know, 46, 47, I really got to be close with because we're all in the same boat. So that's kind of it's an interesting aspect to watch because the stakes are not as high and we're all just trying to get by and get to the next level. And you really find a lot more camaraderie. I think it's a lot of true with the LPGA as well, because while they are very competitive, I mean, Suzanne Pedersen's a buddy of mine at Bay Hill, And I'm telling you, she's as competitive as any person I've ever met in my life. If we have a chipping contest over there, she is trying to drown me. And it's really good for my game because she is so competitive. And they want to win, but they also all go through the same stuff and have a lot of difficulties that we don't have on the PGA Tour. So I'm sure they bond a lot more together.
We're talking with Dickie Pride, PGA Tour veteran. And Frank, I want to ask you this next question, too. You can chime in on this. Forbes came out with their annual list, and they have lists all the time of money and how much money different
Where was on that list?
Different fields. Yeah, we're still going down the list. We haven't come to your name yet.
You were in Appendix B.
Appendix C.
This is their 30 highest paid celebrities under the age of 30. So 30 under the age of 30 from last year. I'll give you guys a chance. I won't make you guess too much, but Taylor Swift is number one. How much money do you think Taylor Swift made last year?
I know Taylor Swift. Okay, she's from Hendersonville, Tennessee, which is Nashville. Hendersonville.
That's not really the point, Frank. Give us a number, Frank. It's a game show.
No. Wait a minute. I got to tell you, she was the nerd in high school. Believe it or not, nobody really liked her.
Oh, I believe it. I believe it.
Oh my God! Can you imagine the boy who made fun of her?
Her?
Who she didn't go out with?
Yeah.
What a dummy! What did she make? $90 million.
Dickie,
I'm going to go with that's a little low. I'm going to go higher.
Ooh.
So I guess if the price is right, I'm going $90 million.
91. She made $170 million
last
year.
Good Lord. That's
now awesome. You understand why these people are always buying another mansion. You're like, don't they already have 9 houses? Yeah,
wait
well,
a minute. Whoa. Time out. Golf Talk America presented by Taylor Swift. I'm calling. I'm calling her manager today.
And she's 26, by the way. She's only 26.
Oh.
So she's not even really pushing 30 just yet. $170 million. Now we get to the top athlete, Lionel Messi. International soccer superstar is 29 years old. Frank, what did he make last year? I'll get to golf here in a second. There's a point to all this.
153.
No. Now we're getting crazy.
Okay, so 90. I'll go with 90.
Oh, you're closer there. 81. 81 for Messi. Now we get to the local as far as this country. Kevin Durant made $56 million last year. He's 28 years old. And now we'll get to golf. Who was the highest paid golfer last year, Dickie?
Under the age of 30 or in general?
Under the age of 30.
Well, it'd have to be Jordan Spieth.
I'd go with Jordan Spieth.
And what do you think the number is? Remember, there's a lot of top golfers under 30 that are all over the world, but okay. I'll let you.
42? Yes. $42 million? Including endorsements and all that.
I was going to go lower. I was going to say 32.
$53 million. For Jordan.
That's the guy we were hanging out with 3-4 weeks ago and just a regular
and Jordan
guy.
Jordan is 23. Ugh. He almost made the under 20 category for this one. And then you go to Rory McIlroy. Rory McIlroy is number 14 in the world under 30. What did Rory make last year?
I don't know, 44, 45.
Dickie?
I'll go with that. I'll go 40.
42 and a half for Rory McIlroy.
This is the Price is Right. I'm really doing good here.
You really are.
I got Frank beat on the Showcase Showdown. I'm liking it.
We better call Drew
now.
Hey, Drew,
I'm holding a 3-foot microphone that's pencil thin, just so you know, just to paint that whole Price is Right picture.
Oh, no. Did you see on the Golf Channel they did a contest last week? Or week before, and they would spin a wheel, and it had different golf resorts on it that you could win. And Lauren
Still
Thompson, well, French Lick was on that, by the way, and the guy won the French Lick Resort stay and play package worth $8,000. But she was using that pencil thin. She said, "I have my game show microphone."
Yeah, you have to.
Yeah, it was too funny. Too funny. Those are big numbers, guys. Good Lord.
Big numbers. So Jordan Spieth, and that was, you know, Jordan Spieth's got nowhere to look but up. So he's already, when you think about it, you know, the fact that Tiger used to be, hands down, that guy on that list. And then Phil would be on there. It's been supplanted. They've been supplanted by two under 30 guys. And I'm sure that Dustin Johnson and Jason Day are probably not too far behind them. But it does just speak Dickie, doesn't it, to the internationalness, if you will, of golf, that it's global. And you can get sponsors and money coming in from a lot of places that you can't necessarily get if you're just in the NFL or the NBA or just in this country.
Oh, for sure. And the big thing with golf is, while these are extraordinary numbers for a young person like Jordan, they can continue for a long time like Phil. I mean, Mr. Palmer was in the top five of endorsements with the of golfers, I think, to the day he passed away. He was always in there. He would always bring in money off the golf course every year because of who he was.
Well, his brand in Asia, my understanding, is still number one over there. That brand, the Palmer brand. Unbelievable.
And so a lot of these guys have that to use, the Tiger, the Jack Nicklaus, the Arnold Palmer, the guys that have been there before him. Because you're right, Dickie, even Arnold, in way past his playing days, was bringing in a boatload of money off of the name Arnold Palmer. And you don't often hear that about a Peyton Manning or somebody in this country who makes a lot of money while they're playing in this country. But when they go into retirement, you don't hear Joe Namath still bringing in $85 million off of the name Joe Namath. But in golf, it's possible. So if you're Jordan Spieth or you're working with Jordan Spieth's finances, the future's got to look pretty bright. If at 23 you're already making $50 million plus, you got to wonder down the road, Jordan Spieth, would he be the first billion-dollar golf guy? It could be, as far as total worth goes. So anyway, interesting stacks. I thought I'd throw those out there because it is kind of we're talking about money and how much pressure there is on the PGA Tour. And if you're Jordan Spieth, it seems like there would be less pressure. Maybe not, because you still want to win tournaments. But boy, as far as taking care of you and your family for the next couple of hundred years, you kind of already checked that one off the list.
Hey, I've got a question for Dickie, real quick.
If it makes you feel better, I've already asked Jordan to adopt me.
I feel a lot better.
I have a question for Dickie. The RSM Classic, Sea Island, St. Simons, whatever, Sea Island, different. You know those courses. Why is everybody going so low? What? There's no wind, of course, but give us your read on those courses, the rotation.
Well, I think to begin with, I think that Seaside played a little bit easier than it normally does, and it will on the weekend, because, well, first of all, to go for the full story and go to the absolute opposite end of what you're talking about with all the money, I was first alternate for the RSM Classic, and I got home yesterday afternoon after I sat on the tee for 2.5 hours waiting to see if someone would withdraw to get in, and I didn't get in, and I drove back home. And I also went to the Monday qualifier, and fortunately, my endorsement deals are right up there on par with Jordan, so I just played for the love of the game. But I played the practice round, and I looked at the golf courses. First and foremost, the greens are absolutely perfect. The job that the superintendents have done with getting the course prepared after Hurricane Matthew is amazing, because you could not tell, other than you could see where some trees had been blown down. The golf courses are absolutely perfect. Now, having said that, I don't think the rough was as high as they were expecting it to be before the hurricane. So I'm sure that had an effect. But the big thing is, when the greens get really good and there's no wind and you can make sure you hit a lot of greens and the greens are true and at good speed, guys are going to make putts. You had a very calm day yesterday. And on the Seaside, I think they did not use the most difficult positions they had, because they have to use them for 2 days, because it's a rotation of two waves have to play the same hole locations.
Right.
So I think that if we get a little wind, and I think the weekend there'll be a little bit more difficult pin positions, and I think that's where you'll get the higher scores. But, you know, with the people making the cut and 156 people playing out there, they're not going to play it as hard as they can, because they want to make sure they finish and they want to make sure that it's fair for everybody for 2 days.
Where was the qualifier? Was that Brunswick Country Club?
It was Brunswick Country Club.
I love that course.
It's really funny. I come off and I played awful. Of course, I go send a video to my teacher, Dan Snyder, afterwards, and he's like, the ball position's back, and all of a sudden I started hitting it good again. I was so mad.
Oh.
But I get off the golf course and started the week as eighth alternate. And this is kind of the stuff people don't hear about with the tour. But I've got good stories of this and bad stories of this. This is one of the lesser of the two. I don't really like this story, but it's the way it is. I went to the qualifier. I didn't play good. I shot like even par, missed it. I think 500 got through. I actually played with a kid named Mark Silvers that got through that really played well, and I didn't see what he shot yesterday, but I hope he plays well. He's a good kid, and he's playing really well. But I get off the course. I call my wife. Cam, I missed the Monday. I missed the Open qualifier, and she goes, okay. I said, but I'm third alternate now, so I'm kind of deciding if I need to stay up here, if I need to come home. Do I need to wait it out and see if anyone withdraws, or, you know, it's only Monday, that kind of thing. But I'd really like to come home, be with my family, and, you know, it's kind of the end of the year, and I'm pretty wiped out. And she said, well, how'd you play today? And I really hit the ball awful today. She says, well, you know, you're not going to get a lot better at golf on I-95.
So go practice.
Yeah, at that particular point, if I could have asked her to marry me again, I would have.
What a great lady.
Because that's the kind of stuff she has to deal with, the kind of support that I get, that I have to have a life and do this craziness that is professional golf. I've also had different times when I went to first alternate where I did get in, and those are a lot more fun. One year in Hawaii, I went over there as third alternate. Chris Smith Monday qualified. I went to second alternate, went through the morning wave on Thursday, and no one's withdrawn. The next week was in Palm Springs, and they'd given me an exemption to play. So I said, well, Kim, let's go enjoy Hawaii for a couple of days, and then let's get to Palm Springs, and I'll get ready for the next tournament. She said, that sounds great. So I left the golf course because the first alternate, Jeff Breho, was there. We went to our hotel. We went out on the beach. We're sitting on a lounge chair. I'm trying to order a drink. I'm trying to wave anyone down for a Mai Tai or something like that. And my telephone rings. Dickie, Slugger White. Hey, Slugger. Steve Elkington just withdrew. You're on the tee in 20 minutes.
No way.
Yes. So now this is 1999. I go racing through my hotel. I'll never forget. I'm sprinting through my hotel, the hallway, trying to get to my room. And I see Fulton Allen, who had played that morning. He was like, Dickie, slow down. Why are you running? I said, I just got in the field, and I'm on the tee in 20 minutes. He goes, Run. Why are you talking to me? Go. I run over to my room. I'd already cleaned out my locker. I put on a golf outfit. I put on slacks and a shirt, and I put on my cleats, and I get my bag. I've called my caddy, who's down in Waikiki. He's like, what do you mean we're in the tournament? I'm like, we just got in the tournament, Danny. Get over here. I go to the range. I hit balls for like 5 minutes. My wife, Kim, goes and makes me a sandwich in the locker room real quick. Makes me a sandwich, turkey sandwich. I take a bite of it. She's put so much mustard on it, it sprays on my white shirt like a Superman S. So I'm like,
nice.
Okay, perfect. What more, you know? I don't have a caddy. Omar Uristi's brother, Rusty, the caddy's for Jeff Maggart now, says, hey, come on, Haas, I got you. No problem. I mean, at that point, you have so much adrenaline going on. You don't even need to hit balls. I hit about 20 golf balls. I hit about 5 putts. I walk over to the first tee, and I'm playing with Mark O'Meara. He's like, you got in for Elkin. That's great. I'm like, yeah, absolutely. So the best part is I get in the first hole, Ole it to the right. I hit a 6-iron right in front of the green. I chip it up there about 8 feet. And I always read my own putts. I'm a field putter, and I always read my own putts. On occasion, I'll ask my caddy, and I put my ball down, respot it. I back up, and as I'm backing up, I bump into Rusty Uristi. He's like, hey, Haas, we had this putt earlier. It's outside the left edge. Okay. Right. I made the putt, made the cut, and went on from there. So that was one of the better ones.
Do you still have that shirt? That's an historic shirt.
No, the mustard-stained white shirt from Fairway and Green. No, I went ahead and got rid of that one.
Yeah, it was
somehow they were able to replace that for me.
You're in Hawaii. They probably thought it was some fancy Hawaiian shirt. I think he's got like a banana on his shirt.
Yeah, like I bought it from Rolfing. Yeah.
Yeah, exact from Rolfing. Yeah. Yeah. Let me tell you, every shirt I have, much like John McGinnis, our good friend, has wine stains on it. So there you go.
Just,
by the way,
if you're gonna do it, I'd rather have the wine than the mustard, but the mustard, it was a good look. It really did look pretty good.
I'm curious, though, Dickie, were you tempted to tell Slugger that you just ordered a Mai Tai?
No.
I don't have 20 minutes. The drink won't be here in 20 minutes, Slugger.
I was a little bit younger then. At the current stage I am now, I probably would have said that. But at the time, I just...
Your wife was pushing you.
Yeah, I mean, you just...
Go.
What do you mean I'm in? There's no one was even rumored to withdraw from the afternoon wave. Two guys withdrew, and here I am. The funny part was Brejo got in, and he had a tee time 20 minutes later than mine. He offered to switch, say, I'll play in that group, and Dickie can play in this group, and that's against regulations. So, but it all worked out.
Cool.
Good story.
By the way, just so you know, Mark Silver shot a 3-under yesterday, so he's at 3-under and looking pretty good. So you must have motivated him a little bit in your round there with him, Mark Silvers.
I told him I was going to kick his leg when he was warming up yesterday so I'd get in the tournament. It's actually what I told him. But no, he's playing. Mark's a good kid. He's played a lot of U.S. Open. He's played two or three U.S. Opens, played a couple of tour events. He's played on the web out of South Carolina, played University of South Carolina. Good kid. Really good player. I'm not surprised he shot 3-under. I expect him to play well today. He's really striking the ball well. And you know, those Monday qualifiers are tough because you have to play good and you can't have a bad break, basically, because you know you have to shoot 5 or 6 under to get through.
Yeah. Sure. You know, so Dickie, going forward, if you are an alternate, just let us know. We have friends in Jersey we can send down to the course.
Exactly. Well, I'll tell you what. I would love that, work. But I would still rather be adopted by Jordan. I'll be honest with you. I'll just
You can be adopted by Jordan. I want to be adopted by Taylor Swift. So
that
there.
If Taylor Swift would adopt me, she'd have a granddaughter that loves her.
Yeah,
Isabel is all about there.
Pretty talented kid, isn't she? That's a great story. We've chewed up a lot of time here.
So Dickie, we're down to four games now. Four college games. You got to cut it down to four games. So go with your top four. Started last night with Louisville being upset by Houston. So Louisville pretty much out of the playoff picture now. They're 9-2. So give us your four games that people keep an eye on and use your expertise. I'm not saying wagering is part of this because certainly we're not endorsing that. But
I bet it could
be. You're going to bet like a bowl of queso on it or not. Here's what Dickie's got to say about it. So what's your first game?
Here's the queso bet. Big game of LSU and Florida from Hurricane Matthew and all that debacle and all that craziness. And I think it's at LSU now. I think Florida's going to come in and LSU is really playing well, and I think they're going to handle it. They're actually a 14-point favorite, which I think is too high. Mm. But Florida's switching quarterbacks, and I think LSU is going to put a whooping on them. And that's going to really help Tennessee in the East to go to the conference championship. So we'll see what happens on that. The game that really interests me the most that I want to see is Colorado-Washington State, because Colorado is – got two losses, but they've got an avenue that they could win out, and they play three top 25 teams to win out, and they could get in the Pac-12 championship. And if they beat, I believe it would be Washington, then they've got a legitimate gripe about, hey, we're a Pac-12 champion, but we have two losses, but their strength of schedule is phenomenal. So it will make the committee have to think twice about Colorado, who was not even on the radar at the beginning of the year, but
nobody's
ready. Half of the game, and I think Colorado will pull it out by three.
Be interesting too. One other addendum to that is the weather. It's been snowing yesterday. It snowed in Denver, and of course, this game is in Boulder, so it'll be interesting. Not that Washington State would be unfamiliar with playing in cold or snowy weather, but it would be interesting to see if that game is going to have any kind of adverse weather effects on it. So, okay, that's a good game.
My guess is the Buffaloes want it as bad as it can possibly get, because that will just play right into their hands of how they want to play the game.
Affect the passing game for Washington State, too.
Big game in the I keep thinking Pac-12, but the Big 12. Big game in the Big 12, Oklahoma and West Virginia. Two teams that actually play defense, which is kind of scary for the Big 12, but it should be a heck of a game. And I think Oklahoma's looking at this, going, they can run this out and try to get into that discussion of getting the top four. They've got, again, they've got two losses, but, you know, there's blood all over the floor right now. Everyone's got one loss except Alabama right now. A two-loss team could get in there. Right now,
well, especially when you consider
Ohio State in the top four. Louisville just went by the way. So that makes Clemson very happy. But now you open the door where a two-loss team could get in the top four and be in the playoffs. I think Oklahoma's looking at that. I think West Virginia's a really good team. They play really good defense. I've enjoyed watching them today, but I think Oklahoma's going to pull this one out because they really, really want it. And well, if we remember the last time Oklahoma played in the Sugar Bowl, it was against a team that I'm a little familiar with called Alabama, and they whipped us pretty good. So I'm sure Stoops is rallying those kids to, hey, let's go in there and we can create our own destiny and get to the playoffs.
Well, and you have to remember too, the Big 12 does not have a conference championship game. So while everybody else will be possibly eliminating each other, Ohio State and still has to play Michigan. They have to play Penn State is going to be in the middle of that. Well, everybody else has the SEC championship games and whatnot that they could possibly lose. Oklahoma could sit there with two losses, just kind of waiting for all the dust to clear. And you're right, Oklahoma could step into the top four, possibly, and make some noise for that top four, trying to get in the playoffs. And once you get in the playoffs, Dickie, like every other sport. Once you get in the playoffs, all bets are off. Anything can happen, as you've seen, as we've all seen in past years. So, okay, that's a good game.
Yeah,
that's a good one. I'm keeping an eye on
that. The first year, they thought there was a lot of debate of whether Ohio State should even be in the playoffs, and they won the national championship decisively, I might add. The semifinal game, they beat Alabama. They did a very good job of beating my Crimson Tide, and it hurts, but that's what the game is. Once you get in the playoffs, anything can happen.
All right, and what else? You got one more game?
I got one more game. Got to go with Stanford Cal. Stanford's 11-point favorite, ranked 24th. I'm going to go with the band. I think the band's got a chance on this one, Frank. This would be your game.
This would be Frank's game.
Frank Stetson's got a chance to win this game.
You know, Jim Grunberg, who owns Seymour Putter Company, made that call of that game when the lateral, lateral, lateral through the band. He was making the call for student radio. That's him on the, as you hear on YouTube. Incredible.
Wow.
The question is the kid that got ran over with the horn?
Yeah,
did
the trombone.
Like, call his dad and say, I was just upset because I wasn't playing like I wanted to, and I threw it across the room, or did I just get leveled by some guy from Stanford?
You know,
that's the question.
I should have been a little smarter in my days, but I wasn't. I told my father the truth because if I'd lied to him, I would be dead. So, yeah, you're right.
It was a tuba. Wasn't it a tuba player?
Well, it was a tuba player and a trombonist. They have the trombone in a glass plexiglass case in the athletic center there.
Oh, they do? Okay.
Yeah, they do. Okay, so Big Dickie didn't call this game. You know, the uncivil war in Nashville Saturday night, 6:30 Central Time.
Yeah, the country's waiting on your pick here, Frank. We need to know, Ole Miss or Vanderbilt?
I'll let Dickie make that call. I'm not going to pick.
Oh, okay.
I think Ole Miss. I loved what they did last week. I mean, huge comeback in the fourth quarter. I mean,
what a great game.
Ole Miss has been waiting for that all year.
Oh, yeah, and without Chad Kelly, this quarterback looks good. Our new quarterback looks good. I won't get into Ole Miss football here, but he looks pretty good.
Okay.
He looks pretty good.
I'll ask one quick question because I did not watch that game. Did they play the same up-tempo, fast offense? They did.
Yes.
And they still had enough gas in the fourth quarter.
Yes. Unbelievable. Yep.
Gotta love it.
They were motivated.
College football, very unpredictable, a lot of fun.
It's going to be cold damp and cold here in Nashville tomorrow night, but we will be there. In fact, Dickie, I will be with I'm tailgating with the Vanderbilt golf team and the Vanderbilt golf alumnus that are all having a tournament today out at Legends Golf Club. Without Snedeker, but Ned Michaels and the whole team from those years are all playing against the existing golf team today. So they're having a tailgate.
Beautiful.
I'll hang with those guys.
That's Scotty Limbaugh, their head coach, has done an exceptional job over there. He actually was an assistant at Alabama for Jay Sewell, and his uncle was an associate AD with Steve Sloan when I was at Alabama and was an associate AD when I was there.
Yeah, Coach Limbaugh. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
Coach Sloan is one of my dear friends and one of my mentors, and really like the coolest guy. I look up to him about as much as anyone I have in my life. If I could model my life and be like him, I'd be a happy man.
There you go. I'm looking forward to tomorrow night. It's going to be fun with all those guys. I may run. I said I was going to play with Harry. I may cancel that and run down there and watch some of them play today. So I'd be better served by not playing today, I can tell you that.
I'm sure Harry's thinking the same thing, Frank.
Yeah, Harry's thinking money is what Harry's thinking. I know.
It should be another great day of college football. Looking forward to it tomorrow. And Dickie, thanks as always for giving us your take on what you think is going to happen and what the big games are going to be. And we'll talk to you again next week. And whether or not you're playing in a tournament, you're on the cut line. If you're getting into a tournament, we're always pulling for you. And I know all the people out there listening to us here on PGA Tour Radio are always pulling for Dickie Pride, because you pull for the good guys, and Dickie's one of the good guys. So hopefully you get into a lot of tournaments coming up here, Dickie. And if you can't be on our show because you're playing in a tournament, we get it. We understand. That's okay. We don't want you to back out of a tournament just to be on our show. I know, as tempting as that might be. Go ahead and take those tournament invites.
It's tough to not, even if I don't come on the show, I might call you on yourself just so I can hear you a little bit, Tim, because it means a lot to me.
I appreciate it. Little man love going.
I feel the love.
I know. Man crush. All right, Dickie, have a great week, okay?
Thanks, guys. Y'all have a good weekend.
Thanks, Dickie.
All right, take care. Dickie Pride, PGA Tour veteran, and an NCAA prognosticator. Picking some of those games, which I tell you, this is a great time of the year, isn't it, Frank? Not only is the weather perfect, because when it's earlier in the year, it's still too hot for football. But right now, all around the country, and I don't care if the leaves are falling, if it's a little bit windy, it's perfect for football.
Yeah,
and that's what
I
love about the fall, isn't it?
It is. And, my phone is sitting here ringing, and Brendan Sweeney, I just answered it, but we can't hear him. He can hopefully hear me, but Brendan Sweeney from the French Lick Resort is calling us right now, so... I'll have to see what Brendan's up to. I think he's back in Orlando. So
wants us to come play.
Wants us to come up and play, the Pete Dye course at French Lick and the Donald Ross course and the Valley course, which is great, too. I love French Lick. And there's another group of guys we love, and that would be the boys from Azalea House, AzaleaHospitality.com. We don't want to forget about them, because they're our sponsor, our road sponsor, for the Golf Talk America On the Road show. So anything Masters-related or Super Bowl, whatever, check them out, AzaleaHospitality.com.
There you go. All right, we got it all in. We do appreciate everybody listening today. We do appreciate Steve Eubanks, senior writer with Global Golf Post, for being with us, and also with Dickie Pride, PGA Tour veteran.
And Mustard, the king of mustard, Dickie Pride.
the guy who's going to be wearing the banana stain on his shirt, you'll know who it is Dickie Pride. We appreciate everybody for listening. And on behalf of Steve and Dickie and Frank Bassett, I'm Tim Matthews. Thanks for being with us. And we'll see you next time right here on Golf Talk America.